Graves had ordered them to fight over open ground. It was a mistake, of course. It was meant to be a mistake. I wondered if it hurt him to give that order. I took a moment in the confusion to walk to the crater's edge, and I surrendered to a patrol of Germanica light troopers. It was a close shave, I don't mind telling you. They almost gunned me down on sight, even though I'd removed all my Legion patches. After identifying myself and asking for Centurion Lisa, I was arrested and hustled to the rear lines again. Centurion Lisa was pissed, but Armel was furious.
"You had the temerity to strike your superior," he asked in a tone that bordered on disbelief. "In Germanica, such an act is punishable by immediate execution. Afterward, we hold a trial to decide if the miscreant will be revived or left dead forever."
"Permed for a punch?" I asked. "That seems kind of prissy to me." He blinked in response to my words, and Centurion Lisa squinched her eyes closed as if she was experiencing a private pain.
"Prissy?" Armel demanded. "I know in my heart I should not ask this, but I feel compelled to do so anyway. Calling the punishment extreme, yes, I could understand that. But this word you use is wrong. In what manner can a harsh penalty seem prissy?"
"Well," I said, "it must be a difference in Legion culture. You see, in Legion Varus we don't take injuries or even death all that seriously. It happens all the time. So if one man hits another, they might get fined or thrown into the stockade for a night. But nobody whines about it. In fact, it's kind of embarrassing to make a big deal out of it. We find it unmanly." He scowled at me, but he removed his hand from his forehead. There I saw I'd split open the skin above and below his right eye. They'd sprayed it with a flesh printer, but you could still tell.
"Unmanly," he echoed. "Such a culture you must have. Undisciplined, barbaric. It would be best if your legion was disbanded. I've said as much for years."
"May I point out that I've pretty much handed a victory to Germanica? That's why I did it. You'll win this pit fight now. Graves is doing his best to throw in the towel without seeming to."
"We've lost thousands of troops," Lisa said. "It hardly feels like he's giving up."
I threw my hands high and laughed at them. "There you go again, more sour grapes. Varus had Germanica on the ropes, but they pulled back, letting you grab the initiative. You now outnumber them, and you're pushing them off the field. What more do you people want?"
"A good perming would be nice,"
Armel said, eyeing me with distaste. I got the feeling that he wasn't used to injuries, much less death. "To a Varus man," I told him, "there's something faintly disgusting about a soldier who's touchy about a little bump on the head."
"Get out!"
Armel shouted, thrusting his finger toward the bunker exit.
"Lisa, stay with him. He must survive until this is over. After that..."
He made a throat-cutting gesture. I was led out into the open air, where I breathed easier. "Damn," I said. "I could smell his breath all the way across the room."
"That was the mess on the floor. You smashed a bottle of fine gin when you tripped him."
"Are you sure?" I asked. "I think it came out of his gut." Centurion Lisa wasn't sweet on me anymore. I could just tell. She led me to a trench, sat me down in it, and posted half a dozen guards around me.
"Don't let him leave," she said. "If he needs to take a piss, he can do it in the trench."
Then she stalked away. One of the non-coms stared at me. He was a black guy who chain-smoked stems when the officers weren't looking. I watched this latest stem glow red in the middle of his face. He offered me one, but I refused. In the distance, the battle still raged on. It seemed farther away every minute. They were still driving Varus back.
"Did you really knock Armel flat?"
the smoking veteran asked me at last.
"Sure did."
"After he invited you into his HQ? After he gave you a drink and shared all his intel? That's some rude behavior, McGill."
"I needed to run some errands. Armel didn't see things my way."
"So you cold-cocked him?"
I shrugged. "He got in the way."
The veteran's eyes narrowed. He flashed into anger.
Don't you try any of that shit with me, McGill. I'll put your face down in this trench and piss on your back.
Sheesh, I said, looking around at the group. Did you guys get your feelings hurt? What a bunch of babies. You Germanica friggers whine more about minor injuries than hogs do. These statements didn't seem to please anyone, but at least they stopped complaining all the time. They gave me the stink eye instead. Overhead, the camera drones were thick. I wondered what the home audience was thinking. About 20 minutes later, I got my answer to that question.
"McGill,"
whispered a female voice. I looked around in confusion. The Germanica gang guarding me had stepped away and stood in a lazy circle. I sat in the trench, bored and ready to go back to my ship.
"Who's that?" I asked in a harsh whisper.
"Geetha."
I looked around slowly, and I thought I could tell where the voice was coming from. She was next to me in the trench. I could feel her body heat in the cool night air.
"You stealthing again? What's up?"
"Shh,"
she hissed in my ear, closer than ever. I felt two small hands on my shoulders. I wanted to hunch up, but I tried not to move.
"Listen,"
she said.
"I came to tell you this isn't working. The new streams. It's not convincing."
"What's not convincing?" I asked.
"Hey," the veteran with the stem said, turning his head to frown down at me.
"Shut up down there. You can say your prayers later for all the good it will do."
The other Germanica troops laughed and shifted comfortably. Things must have looked pretty good to them. The battle was clearly going their way. At the far end of the crater, I could still hear steady gunfire, but it wasn't the raging storm of a half hour ago.
"You can't end it like this," Geetha said. "All of Bloodworld is watching you right now."
My eyes drifted up to check on the camera drones. It did seem like there were more of them up there than I'd seen previously.
"They're all wondering why you're on your knees in this pit. It looks like you've surrendered. The populace is confused. They will riot in the streets soon."
"They really don't like confusion then, huh?" I whispered.
"No, they like a hero. They've chosen you. They don't understand why you're being humiliated while your army marches to victory."
"I get it."
A boot struck the back of my head. Knocked forward, I grunted.
"No one said you could talk, Varys,"
the veteran told me. Then he made a mistake. He spit on me. Now, a man like me can take a lot of abuse. I've been tortured, murdered, beaten, and strangled plenty of times. Throw in a few poisonings and even having my guts eaten out of my belly while I watched, I'd seen it all. But spitting on a man, that's just an insult without a cause.
"Throw that stealth suit over me," I told Geetha. "Over both of us."
"No."
"Why not, girl?" I whispered. "It's roomy enough. Those Volbites were big."
She was silent for a second.
"It's too intimate. Such close contact. It isn't done."
Wham!
A fist slammed into my ear. My helmet was off, and it hurt pretty good.
"I said, shut up!"
the veteran roared. A scattered round of laughter went up from the group. Becoming almost as annoyed with Geetha as I was with the Germanica troops, I reached for her in the dark. She was invisible, but in order to talk to me, she was very close. A quick up-down motion was all it took. I grabbed that bag-like stealth suit she had over her head and pulled it over myself as well. She made a small gasping sound. Seen from the inside, the stealth suit wasn't completely transparent, but it wasn't opaque either. It was kind of like being inside a loose weave garment that reminded me of a gunny sack.
"What the fuck?"
a voice said a few seconds later. "Where'd he go?" Lights played around us on the dirt, but I sat still. It was weird to see the light shine right through our bodies and strike the ground underneath us. It was as if we were transparent, but I knew the suit was bending and refracting light around us. My hand reached up and clamped itself on Geetha's mouth. I sensed she might be thinking about screaming.
"He must have slipped away," said one of the Germanica guards. "Shit, shit, shit!"
the veteran hissed out between clenched teeth.
"Find him, or it's your ass."
Footsteps crashed around in the dark. They were looking all over, but they weren't searching the trench. Why should they?
They'd all shined lights into that particular spot and seen it was empty. "Varys!" a man shouted, but I didn't even move. Inside the stealth suit, I could see Geetha's shadowy face clearly enough. Her eyes were wide with shock. I eased my hand away from her mouth.
"You have dishonored me," she whispered. "I should kill you."
Can you do that later, maybe?" I asked. "I'm in a bit of a hurry."
"Let go of me. You're violating my person."
"I'm up against you because we're both inside a 1 meter bag."
"No wonder these men hate you so much."
Sighing, I considered knocking her out and leaving her in the trench. The trouble was, these Germanica friggers weren't totally dumb. They'd find her and they'd know she had something to do with my escape. If they didn't recognize her, they might even kill her. Life was cheap to a legionnaire. But Geetha had never been scanned for revival, as far as I knew. She didn't even have a tapper to record her mental engrams. She might be permed. Not sure what else to do, I stood up, lifting her with me. I carried her like a kid. I was lucky she wasn't carrying any weapons. The look on her face told me I'd have been dead otherwise. Heading toward the crater wall, I ran with her in my arms. She squirmed, but she didn't try to gouge out my eyes or anything. For that, I was grateful. Once we were out of the Germanica camp, I crouched down and waited.
"You want me to release you here?"
I asked. "I can let you run up and out of the crater, but I need your stealth suit to fix things." She stared at me with an odd expression on her face.
"You are very forceful. I thought you would demand intimacy."
I said, thinking that over for a second. Finally, I got it. "Oh, no, no, no. I wasn't going to do that."
"You behave like a littermate put out to stud," she said. "I'm no brood mother."
"Right. Of course not." There was a lull in the conversation while I reviewed my tapper. My inbox was full of nasty messages. Among them were automated battle updates from Legion Varys. They were down to 10% effectiveness.
"Do you find me unattractive?"
Geetha asked. She was sitting next to me, and we were hip to hip under that stealth suit. It was kind of like being wrapped up inside a blanket together. The truth was, she was a lovely girl, but my mind was on other things. "Listen," I said, "I'll take you on a date sometime if this all works out, but right now I've got to leave you here." I ditched her then, lifting the stealth suit off her and standing in it. She stood uncertainly. There were snipers everywhere, and I was sure most of them were looking the other way, toward the front lines, but you never knew. I grabbed her shoulders, turned her around so she aimed uphill, and gave her a slap on the butt to get her moving. It was what my dad might have done to a horse that didn't know which end was up. Geetha looked alarmed, but my prompting worked. She began trotting up the hill. Moving down into the camp again, I took one glance back. I thought I could see her at the top of the crater. She was part of the crowd now. I hoped she wouldn't catch a stray round. I'd heard a number of Bloodworlders watching the battle from the lip of the crater had died that way. Then I forgot about Geetha and moved through the Germanica trenches. They were almost all empty, except for their dead. The fighting was all on the other side of the crater. There wasn't much time left, so I got a move on. Chapter 57 By the time I managed to sneak my way back to Armel's bunker, they were in victory celebration mode. The camera drones were buzzing overhead, too. There had to be 30 of them up there, humming away and streaming the scene from every angle. "Germanica has won!" Armel shouted, throwing his hands high. I could tell he was very aware of the cameras, and he was hamming it up for them. Centurion Lisa and a crowd of other officers had gathered around. Most of them looked weary. Many were wounded. At least Varys had given them hell. A booming crack of gunfire rang out in the distance at that moment, making everyone look up to the edge of the crater. Up there, two squads of littermates stood in perfect order. Two squads of nine, walking three by three, began marching down the wall of the crater. "Ah," Armel said, "they have come to honor me at last." We all watched the procession, transfixed. But for me, it wasn't the towering giants in their armor that attracted my eye. It was the smaller figure between them. If I wasn't mistaken, Geetha walked in the center.
She was alone and clearly in charge. Inside my stealth suit, I frowned. I sure hoped she wasn't harboring any ill feelings. The heavy troopers stood nearly 3 meters tall. Even at that height, they weren't lanky or thin of build in any way. They were hulking brutes wearing polished heavy armor that reflected our lights with dazzling beams. Each of the giant figures carried a massive high-tech rifle that fired a large accelerated round. I knew from experience those guns could put down a legionnaire or stop an air car with a single shot. In addition to their rifles, they carried thick blades. These were slightly curved and had a bright leading edge. Wielded with the unnatural power of the heavy trooper, they could chop off limbs. They weren't utilized with any kind of finesse, but rather treated like meat cleavers in close combat. The procession approached us, and Armel ordered his troops to stand back. "Make way! Make way!" he shouted. His delight was obvious on his face. The Germanica pukes backed up, scowling. There was no love lost between basic humans and bloodworlders. We'd been mortal enemies up until now. Armel, however, was beaming. "This is a fine day. Look, the sun rises in the east." It was true. The skies were turning orange as the fierce star we called Epsilon Leporis spun slowly into view, coming over the edge of the crater like the eye of an elder god. The night was over, and short though it may have been in hours, it had been long and hard fought for the thousands who died in this bloody pit. All told, I estimated that less than 2 cohorts worth of Germanicus' troops had lived to see the dawn, and Varus had been wiped out. The survivors gathered to watch the ceremony. They came up out of their trenches, smeared in filth. They lined the hills and even the crater walls themselves. At the top of the crater's rim, a great throng grew. Thousands stood silently, watching us. Armel loved it all. He walked in a tight circle, unable to contain his glee. His heels kicked up with every step, such was his level of excitement. Standing off to one side, I had to crush myself against the outside walls of his bunker in order to avoid being bumped into. The stealth suit still hid me from view, but it wouldn't stop anyone from noticing they were touching a ghost. "This is a fantastic moment for Legion Germanica," Armel announced. "We've won an entire planet for Mother Earth. Let it be known for all time that we have gifted this prize to humanity. That we have reunited our species, brother and sister. All those who were once pitted against one another in war are now allies." It was a pretty speech, I had to give him that. It even sounded like he meant it. Glancing up, I saw the camera drones shift a little. They were focused on Geetha now. She walked forward in a ceremonial fashion. She was wearing a white garment. It looked kind of like a white sheet, clasped at the shoulder by a golden sunburst. Stopping to stand in front of Armel, she stared around at them all, regal in her manner. Damn, was she a fine-looking woman. She had an exotic look to her, an ethereal beauty that usually only existed in holovids and retouched ads back home.
"Blood has been owed," she said in a loud, clear voice. "Blood has been paid. This contest is over."
Then she did something none of us had been expecting. She reached up with her fine-boned fingers and touched the emblem at her shoulder. Her garment dropped away, and she stood there as nude as the day she'd been born. A murmur went up from the audience. We were no strangers to nudity, even if Geetha was an especially nice-looking specimen. But this whole thing, it seemed like some kind of ancient rite, a pagan festival from our distant past. Just how different were the Bloodworlders from normal folks back home? If some of them decided to settle on Earth in the future, I wondered if they would bring such archaic practices to our world. I shuddered to think how they might fit in.
"Who shall claim this prize?"
Geetha asked, looking at Armel. We all froze for a second. I think there were about 1,000 brains ticking like clocks, processing this new input. Was Geetha the prize? Or part of it? I guess it made sense in a way. She'd been the ruler of this world, so it was only fitting that she'd give herself to whoever the new master was going to be. That kind of thinking had to be the squid influence. It seemed clear to me. Cephalopods only understood 2 possible social roles in their society. You were either a master or a slave, or possibly both relative to others higher or lower than you on the food chain. Still, I couldn't imagine what a squid would want with a human woman, pretty or not. I could hear audible gasps from the Germanica troops when Geetha made her offer, especially from the women. There were a lot of scowls, too. I'm sure they were as shocked as I was. But not Armel. He was grinning like it was his wedding night. He bowed deeply, and with a sweep of his hand, he caught Geetha's fingers in his, bringing his lips to brush against her knuckles. That's when I made my move. I pushed forward, knocking people out of my way. It's easy and kind of fun to bull your way through a crowd when you're invisible. Everyone should try it sometime. People growled when I jostled them aside. They turned angrily, but then a look of shock came over them when they realized there was no one there to yell at. They staggered away as I advanced. I felt like a shark fin cutting through the waves. "Stop!" I boomed. Armel's mouth had just opened after his lingering finger kiss. Frowning, he straightened with Geetha's bare hand still in his gauntlet. Everyone turned to look in my direction. Whipping off the stealth suit, I tossed it down and stood tall. "No," I said. "I claim the prize."
"McGill?"
Armel growled. His face registered disbelief, but it quickly downshifted into rage. A dozen officers surged forward, seizing me from every direction, but Armel waved them back. Reluctantly, they released me and stepped away. Geetha made no move to cover her nude body in any way. She seemed completely at ease, standing buck naked on the worldwide vid network.
"A challenge has been issued," she said calmly.
She looked at Armel.
"How do you respond?"
Armel's face had been squirming like a toad on a spike this whole time. His cheeks had turned an awful shade of purple. He stared at me. His right eye twitched where I'd sent it smashing onto the floor earlier. I got the impression the new skin he'd sprayed on it was itching him something fierce.
"I will face the challenge," he roared.
Chapter 58. The situation had not gone the way I'd expected. In truth, I was kind of pissed off. Armel knew the score. Earth needed to impress these people. We were just playing a game for them, putting on a show. Wasn't that how you impressed any culture when you met up with its members for the first time? We were supposed to politely participate in whatever tea ceremonies, feasts, feats of strength, or intellectual contests they thought were important. We weren't supposed to take this kind of pageantry personally. But no, not old Armel. In my humble opinion, he was guilty of the worst sin of all. Pride.
"You're blowing it," I said to him quietly.
His eyes flashed at me angrily.
"I will not yield in front of billions. You have sown the seeds, McGill. Now it is time for the harvest."
I had no idea what he was going on about, and I didn't much care. I looked at Geetha hopefully. But Geetha, for her part, appeared to be more curious than alarmed by this turn of events. She watched the two of us with interest. Was that a gleam in her eye? Did she like the idea of 2 men fighting over her? I got the impression that she did. Damn it. Seeing there wasn't going to be any help coming from her to talk Armel out of this, I sighed. "All right," I said. "What do we do now?"
"You fight, of course,"
Geetha said.
"To the death. On this planet, only blood can settle a disagreement."
The camera drones overhead looked thicker than ever. There must have been 30 of them buzzing around up there by now, maybe more. They'd been racing in from all directions, flying to us from every corner of the crater. Apparently no one wanted to count the dead or recap the action any more. They wanted to see this new wrinkle we'd added to the show. Armel was calm again. I watched as he puffed himself up, his nose lifted up into the air with growing confidence.
"As the challenged," he said, "I will choose the manner in which honor is satisfied. A duel, McGill. You will meet me with crossed swords. No armor, no other weapons. Right here, right now."
"A duel?" I asked, narrowing my eyes.
"Yes. Do you yield in fear?"
Armel asked.
"Hell no." "All right, then. Centurion Lisa."
With two rapid claps of his hands, he summoned Lisa. She walked up to us, eyeing Geetha's naked body indignantly.
"Tribune?"
she asked.
"Your unit failed me today,"
Armel said to Lisa without even looking at her.
"Now you will help witness this event. Honor will be served."
"Great,"
she said.
"Get the wooden case. You'll find it behind my desk."
Lisa stalked away in annoyance. While she rummaged in his bunker, Armel kept trying to stare me down. I returned his stare with my best slack-faced, dumb-assed expression. Sometimes that threw people off. He stripped off his armor, so I stripped off mine to match. When Lisa returned with an old-fashioned hardwood box, I broke the deadlock with Armel and checked it out. "Is that real cherry wood?" I asked him.
"It's rosewood, imbecile."
He opened the case with a dramatic flourish. Sure enough, there were two long, skinny swords in there. They looked like a pair of meter-long toothpicks to me. The metal was dark rather than bright, and I got the feeling the swords were really old. Grabbing one, I flexed it in half and it snapped back. "Pretty good steel," I commented.
"They're family heirlooms, relics of a better day, 200 years ago."
Slashing experimentally, I clipped the top of his head, making him duck. A few hairs floated down. "You done yapping yet?" I asked. Snarling, he grabbed a sword and strode a few paces off. Then he turned to face me.
"Salute, you baboon,"
he said, snapping to attention and bringing the sword up vertically to his face. I did the same, and he slashed it down in an arc. It made an impressive sound as it cut through the air. I wasn't really a swordsman. Sure, I'd been taught the basics, but Armel had clearly studied fencing seriously. Way back when I'd signed up with Varys, I'd been tested in a fight with a robot using a blade like this one, and there had been refreshers since then. The Legion thought it taught balance and discipline for a soldier to be familiar with all sorts of weapons. But real pro fencing is another thing entirely. I had to resort to what I knew, which was knife fighting and my force blade training. Unfortunately, a rapier is a weapon that requires a different approach to succeed. Armel came at me with his body turned sideways and his weapon arm extended, his other hand cocked behind him for balance. I did what most people did when someone lunged at them. I gave ground. Our weapons touched, sparked, and he slid his blade over mine. He almost nailed me in the heart right off. I don't mind saying that it spooked me. I managed to beat his blade away as I was stronger and had more reach. He came at me again, and I was running out of room to retreat. There were open trenches behind me, but I couldn't spare a glance to look for them. Rather than fall into one and be skewered like a dog, I decided to launch a clumsy counterattack of my own. My only real move was to slap at his blade and thrust. He fell back, smoothly, caught my blade with his, and it slipped past him. I tried again and again, making rapid thrusts, staying on the attack. He shuffled back, parrying with ease. Then he began to smile.
"I am your master, McGill," he said.
To prove it, he riposted and nailed me in the shoulder. Jeez, that hurt. It felt like he'd chipped the bone. Blood ran down my bicep, and although I was able to ignore the pain, I knew my arm would soon weaken. We separated, sides heaving. He came at me again, and I countered. Neither one of us was moving too seriously, He was still grinning, and I was beginning to dislike that grin.
"Children should never be allowed to play with a man's weapon," Armel announced, and his blade dipped to thrust low.
I skipped back, but I was too slow. He nailed me in the foot. I countered with a vicious slash. You weren't supposed to slash with these things, but I didn't care. Crippled up pretty bad, I was limping and painting the stones with blood. Armel sniffed, stepped back, and made a flippant gesture with his fingers.
"Switch," he said.
"What?"
"Your right side is finished. Try your left. I will stand until you're ready."
Thinking about it, I decided to trust him. Why would he jump me now? He could have nailed me in the gut that last go-round, by my estimation. Taking the sword to my left, I felt only slightly less skilled. A Varus man soon learns to be as close to ambidextrous as possible. It just came with the job, as we got wounded often. Then that sick bastard jammed his sword right through my left knee. He left me hissing with that one, giving me a clucking sound as he walked around in a circle, raising his hands high. Germanica troops whooped and hollered. They loved it. Hurting badly and slow on my injured legs, I took a shot when his back was turned, but I'll be damned if he didn't whip his blade around, slapping mine so hard I almost dropped it. A red line was drawn across my wrist as well. Armel turned to survey the damage with the air of an instructor who's failed to teach a bumpkin. He put his hands on his hips, made little sucking sounds with his mouth, and shook his head.
"So pathetic," he said. "A dismal performance, even for a man of low skill such as you. All four limbs, useless."
Rage was coursing through me now. I don't know where it comes from, but I've got a bad temper in me at times like this. I wanted to hurt Armel. I wanted to hurt him bad. My mind raced, trying to come up with a way. Then I had it. My face split into a grin of my own. I took his sword and broke it over my good knee. I dropped the two pieces on the rocky ground where they clanged and clattered.
"Oh, damn!" I called out, shaking my head. "I'm so sorry. I bet those swords were important to you too, huh?"
After staring at me with insane eyes for a moment, Armel lost it. I've seen that happen before. Hell, I've done it myself. But this particular meltdown caught me by surprise. After everything I'd done, all the bad blood between us, what had really set him off was breaking a sword? Go figure. He came at me, and there was no room for doing much. I managed to shift a little so the deadly tip didn't go right into my chest. Instead, it thrust through my guts. He pushed it deep, all the way to the hilt. That was his only mistake. A real kill was a cold-blooded thing. You were supposed to thrust deeply, piercing the organs, then step back out of the way. Let shock do the work, or blood loss. But he wanted to hurt me just as badly as I'd wanted to hurt him. He drove that sword through my belly until most of it came out the other side. That's when I grabbed him. He was in close, and I wasn't about to let him go. I'm a big man by anyone's accounting. My hands were each twice the size of his, and I stood a head taller. When fencing or shooting, that didn't matter much. But in a clinch, everything changed. Maybe I should have strangled him. That would have been the more usual approach. But I was pissed off by this time. Pain, embarrassment, and just plain being tired of his shit worked on my mind, creating an awful concoction. So I grabbed him, bent his sword arm over my knee, and broke it. He gave a cry of rage and pain. He released the sword, which was still stuck through my guts. He tried to retreat, but I had a good hold on him. I only had one working arm, but I still found it easy to throw him on his back. Standing over him, I looked down, panting. "Do you yield?" I asked. His eyes blazed. "Never!" Nodding, I pulled his own sword out of my guts and thrust it through his heart. It wasn't a fine thing. It was simple butchery. Armel died, snarling, on his back, with his whole legion watching. I hoped it would give them all nightmares. Chapter 59.
After the duel was over, I was in a pretty bad way. "Anyone got a flesh printer handy?" I asked, but they all sneered. Only Centurion Lisa relented. She took a can of new skin spray off her belt and tossed it to me. It fell to the ground, rolling away. I went after it slowly, painfully, but a long, graceful arm picked it up for me. I straightened up, and I met Geetha's eye. She was radiant. She looked enamored, and she was still naked. Taking my right arm in her hand, she began to spray a thick, foaming coat of fresh cells. They adhered to wounds all over me, stinging and tickling. She sprayed until the bottle was empty, then tossed it aside.
"You have won," she said, "as I knew you would."
Forcing a smile, I nodded. My eyes drifted up to the drones that hovered around us still. "You hear that, Blood World? I command this legion, and my troops won the day. Serve me, and we'll fight together." There was no cheering. The Germanica shitheads were sullen, but they didn't try anything.
"It's done,"
Geetha said, taking my arm. My blood stained her hands. "What next?" I said. "I don't want to pass out in front of everyone."
"No, no, that won't do. Come with me. We must remove you from view."
I began limping toward Armel's bunker, but she squeezed my arm, halting me.
"Don't walk that way. You must appear strong."
Gritting my teeth, I sucked in a breath and walked as normally as I was able. It's funny how adrenaline pumping through a man during a fight can keep the pain at bay. But the second your brain knows it's over, you feel it all. Each step was agony. Each movement sent fire through my wounded belly in particular. Geetha had stopped the bleeding, but I was pretty cut up inside. My guts had fresh holes I'd never been born with. I could feel one chamber spilling into another, swelling my internals. Somehow I made it to the bunker and slammed the door shut. Sprawling in Armel's chair, I sighed and leaned back until it creaked in protest. "Ah," I said, "that's better. Can you get me a drink?"
"Alcohol, but you have an injury in your digestive tract."
"You don't say," I chuckled. But I stopped immediately because it hurt. "I hope your people loved the show."
"They did. Reports are coming in. They're accepting the victory. The final struggle seemed to convince them Earth basics aren't weak."
"Fair enough." She poured me a glass of straight gin. It tasted pretty bad, but I didn't care to explain mixed drinks to her. My mouth was soon numb, and the rest of me slowly followed. Geetha, in the meantime, was pulling off my clothes. For some reason, I thought she was planning on nursing me back to health, but I'd thought wrong. She climbed on me and mounted up, right there on Armel's chair. I almost pushed her off, as jostling me around right now was going to hurt my gut pretty bad. But after looking her over and seeing the earnest look in her eyes, I decided to give in. Geetha had her way with me then. I was pretty sure it was a first for Armel's field office. Unfortunately, before either of us had finished, I died. When I came back to life, I found myself in familiar territory.
"What's his Apgar?"
"A low 8. I guess it will do." They helped me off the table. I felt sore this time, but not in the guts. It was more of an all-over ache.
"Did you guys use expired plasma?" I asked.
"We never do that, McGill," the bio said.
Frowning, I realized I recognized the voice. It was Specialist Thompson.
"Hey, Evelyn."
"Don't call me that."
One look at her eyes, which were downcast and all business, and I knew it was over.
"Did you ever really care?"
I asked her. She paused with her poking and prodding.
"Did you?"
"Hell yeah,"
I said with enthusiasm.
"I don't believe you."
"Oh, come on. I didn't take money to seduce you."
That line earned me a slap, I let her get away with it, but when she pulled back to take a second shot, I caught her wrist.
You're hurting me, Centurion.
As this conversation developed, the orderlies in the room fell quiet. They had big eyes and exchanged surprised glances. I let her go and got off the gurney. Pulling on a uniform, I regretted that there was no shower to step into. You know, I said to Evelyn, you guys really should put a shower in here. If I could wash this goop off, I'd feel a lot better going back to the front. She sniffed at the idea.
I'll make sure to mention that to my CO, she said in a sarcastic tone.
Germanica does it.
Why don't you sign up with them, then? Or better yet, desert, and go down to your girlfriend on Bloodworld.
Turning around, I put my hands on my hips.
Are you serious? Is that what your problem is?
Something in my tones sent the orderlies skittering out of the chamber. In the old days, when I'd been a non-com, they might have tried to kick me out. But now that I was an officer, they bailed out and left Evelyn to face me alone. Trying to calm down, I remembered who I was and turned away. I headed for the door. When my hand was on it, I heard Evelyn sigh behind me.
I'm sorry.
She said it fast and quiet, but I figured she probably meant it.
Me too,
I rumbled. Then I left. In a bad mood, I headed for my module and my long, empty bunk, but my tapper began buzzing. Someone had put a change alert on my revival status. The damned computers always tattled on a man these days. It was Tribune Deitch, so I didn't have much choice. I answered it.
McGill?
Deitch asked.
Is your head on straight?
I'm good to go, sir.
Excellent. Clean up and present yourself on Gold Deck in your dress blues.
That was a surprising request. I kind of liked the implications. Will do, sir. A few minutes later, I was whistling in the shower. 10 minutes after that, I arrived on Gold Deck. Hell, even the tubes were working again.
Centurion,
Winslade asked as I approached.
What are you doing here?
I stopped and appraised him.
What are you doing?
He asked again.
That's a demented look on your face, even for you.
I'm considering throttling you, sir.
It's the only way I can be sure you're not Claver.
Winslade made a puffing sound.
Of course I'm Winslade. Claver was arrested and executed halfway through that nonsense in the pit.
Yeah? Who did the good deed?
Graves. He did it down there in the pit. It's disturbing, actually. What if he'd guessed wrong?
I'd known all about this, naturally, as I was the one who'd put Graves up to it. Still, it was fun to make Winslade sweat a little. Winslade's account did give me one piece of vital information. Apparently Graves hadn't told him I was the one who'd spotted Claver. That was just as well, I figured. Nodding, I stepped past him, but he snapped out a thin-boned hand to block me.
You still haven't told me...
Deitch summoned me. Dress blues, she said. See this? I'm wearing my Dawn Star. The Dawn Star was a silver four-pointed medal, a high honor. I'd received the award after helping to send the Magua battle fleet back to the core systems a few years back. Oddly enough, Winslade didn't seem impressed. He looked me up and down, then let me pass in disgust. That was a good thing, because my mood had been shifting into a dark zone. If he'd riled me up any further, I might have punched him and spent the night in the brig. Deitch let me in the moment I reached her door. Graves was waiting inside as well. They stood up and congratulated me. That was damned unusual, but I took it in stride.
McGill,
Graves told me,
I thought you were dead as a mackerel after Armel ran you through. That you managed to beat him after that? Well, mark me impressed.
Nah, I said. Never count out a Georgia boy. There's always a little more juice left in a man like me.
Indeed,
Deitch said. I thought it was a strange thing to say, but I didn't complain. After all, I was the hero of the hour, and it seemed like people were acknowledging that fact for once. Is that why you summoned me, sirs? For a hearty congrats?
Not just that,
Deitch said.
You have a few more duties to perform. You must be present in the morning for the review of the Bloodworld Army.
Down there, on the planet?
That's right, Graves answered. You'll review the troops while they parade around in their full kits.
But that's not all, Deitch said. Graves, could you excuse us?
His eyes slid from me to Deitch, then back again.
Are you sure about that, Tribune?
Quite sure, she said sternly.
Shrugging, Graves walked out. My eyes followed him. Graves was acting like I was going to face something unpleasant. Perhaps he knew what this was all about. I certainly didn't.
Tribune?
I asked when we were left alone.
Centurion,
she began.
Are you a loyal soldier? A man who would give his life for Earth and Empire?
I said, already not liking where this was going. I think I've proven that by giving my life 100 times or more, sir.
Yes, of course. You're a decorated hero. Perhaps that was the wrong way to ask.
Tribune, could you just get to the point and tell me whatever it is you're holding back?
All right. McGill, we've won Blood World. No, that isn't quite right. You have won Blood World.
That doesn't sound like a reason to be so down in the dumps to me, sir.
No, you wouldn't think so, but here it is. The Blood Worlders aren't satisfied with the generalized concept of James McGill as their hero. In order to march into our gateway by the millions, they want you to be there, to command them personally.
Deitch met my eye then, and what she was saying began to sink in. Are you serious? They want me to preside over this dirt-hole planet like a king or something?
Or something. In particular, you'll function as Geetha's consort. That shouldn't be too painful for you, hmm?
I said, my mind whirling. I liked Geetha in the most basic way a man could like any beautiful woman, but to abandon Earth? My family?
You're asking too much, Tribune, I said.
There will be perks. You'll be made a primus. Perhaps in time we can arrange for your family to be transported out here to join you. All you have to do is get these people to march a few million troops between our gateway posts whenever they're needed. It should be a very cush post.
My mind was racing. I felt like I was being perned. No more Earth, no more Georgia, no more Legion Varus. How long, sir? I asked. What kind of a term are we talking about?
Deitch gave a tiny shrug. Years, I should think. No more than a decade, surely.
I felt sick. I'd walked in here on the top of the world, but Deitch had managed to bring me down hard inside of 5 short minutes.
Well?
She asked.
Will you do it?
Do I have any choice, sir?
None whatsoever.
All right, then. Put me down as a volunteer.
Excellent. Your cooperation was assumed, naturally. You'll be departing for the planet shortly. You can ride in my lifter inside the command module. You'd like that, wouldn't you?
Sure thing, Tribune. Stunned, I was dismissed. I marched back out of her office and headed for the tubes. Outside the big viewing ports, I could see Blood World in all her stained, dirty, rust-orange, ugly-assed glory. Was this really to be my home? For a decade or more? I couldn't fully grasp the concept. Chapter 60 I could almost hear the trumpets blare, but they didn't have any trumpets on Blood World. Thousands, no, millions of troops stood in a vast array before me. They didn't form a parade, not exactly. They marched up in a single, threatening mass and stood at attention before Geetha and me. We stood up on a pedestal together, side by side. The pedestal was big, more of a stage, really, built with stone chunks and smoothed over by puffcrete. It wasn't lovely, it wasn't even decorated, but in typical Blood Worlder fashion it was very functional. From that shared perch, we were a good 10 meters above the massive host of troops. They stood before us in the roaring desert heat, their ranks stretching out for as far as my eyes could see.
"You guys really go in for the ceremonies," I told Geetha. She glanced at me curiously.
"Isn't that the norm for Earth? Our oldest Vid documents show standing armies like this."
"In the old days, maybe. I guess you guys must have some historical footage to go by. Did you bring it here from Dust World?"
"We must have. The cephalopods didn't let us keep much from our heritage, but what we do have is full of marching armies, pride, service, and sacrifice."
She listed these three words as if they were some kind of a slogan. I had the feeling they were, for her. The squids were bastards any day of the week, but I felt they'd outdone themselves with my kin here on Blood World. They'd manipulated their bodies and their minds, seeking to form an army that was unstoppable. To compound the sin, we Earthers had come along to take advantage of these people. They were eager and felt lost without their old masters, and I'd helped to provide them with new ones. The army saluted then, all at once. I never saw or heard a signal that kicked off the salute, but I did hear the deafening, unified shout that roared out of a million mouths at once. Wincing, I fought the urge to put my hands over my ears. I didn't think that would look hero-like.
"McGill,"
a voice spoke into my headset. It was Graves, and he sounded businesslike as usual.
"We're ready at our end."
Looking over my shoulder, I saw the massive arch behind us come to life. It lit up with coruscating colors, mostly a pinkish white with big moving patches of silver that drifted like clouds. The arch was a huge gateway. It was a military-issue portal built by our tech smiths back on Earth for this precise purpose. It was, of course, much bigger and more elaborate than the single-file gateway posts we'd brought with us from Earth. To get that kind of tech out here, with huge generators and heavy metal coils and all, the Legion had used the small gateway posts we'd brought with us. The idea was ingenious to me. We'd brought out a small unit, set it up, then walked through that to haul out this much bigger contraption. A small army of techs had built it piece by piece in the open desert. The stage I stood on, stone though it was, had a massive fusion generator buried inside. I could feel the thrum of it coming up into my boots. The truth was, it set my teeth a little on edge. "Looks good down here, Primus," I told Graves. I had to speak loudly to be heard over the din the troops were making. I turned back to the army to see what the fuss was about. A brigade of giants had just arrived. These weren't the small kind like the littermates. They were much taller and thicker. Each one was a true monster, 6 meters in height or more. They carried massive energy projectors, glittering shields of force wrapped around their bodies in a glassy nimbus. To greet their big brother, the littermates wailed and caterwauled like demons. I expected these monsters to press ahead, marching through the spherical portal we'd made for them, but they didn't. Not yet. Geetha gave my hand a squeeze.
"The brood mothers are coming," she said excitedly.
This grabbed my attention. I'd never seen the females that had supposedly birthed all these monstrosities. Not knowing what to expect, I craned my neck and leaned this way and that. "Where are they?" I asked, finally. "All I see are some flower girls walking under those giants." Geetha frowned.
"Those are the brood mothers."
My mouth gaped. "How could those tiny women give birth to something 6 meters tall?"
"They don't gestate the giants in their bodies,"
Geetha said in a tone that indicated I was of substandard intellect.
"Their eggs are harvested, and the offspring are grown in breeding facilities."
"Huh. Sounds kind of dull." She let go of my hand, and I got the idea I'd insulted her somehow. But I didn't care. I wasn't too keen on my new role as troop reviewer anyway. "Is this about over?" I asked her. "When they start marching through, we should take a break." Geetha gawked at me. Her face told me I'd said something shocking, but for the life of me, I didn't know what it was.
"This is the marching of the host," she said in a formal tone. These brave soldiers are willing to die for you. The least you can do is stand and watch them.
Sure. After a few thousand brood mothers did a little bit of fancy footwork, they stepped aside at last. The giants then began marching up the steps to the stage, two abreast. Geetha and I stood off to one side, letting them pass us. They were impressive, but they also stank. Each one cast us in a deep shade briefly, and I could feel a gust of their body warmth puff into my face as they marched by. Trying not to look disgusted, I took to holding my breath briefly as each puff came, and then sucking in some fresher air as the next pair approached. It left me feeling lightheaded.
"Is something wrong?"
Geetha asked. She'd been watching me. That was a bad thing. Ever since I'd been a kid in church and school, after a while some lady had started watching me. They always frowned. Eventually, I knew that frown was going to turn into an outright scowl. "I'm fine," I lied. Geetha turned back to the passing giants. Her face soon brightened. She didn't seem to notice the puffs of stink, or to think these huge freaks were disturbingly close. It was all normal to her. After a full frigging hour-long parade, the last giant stepped through and vanished. The littermates started howling again, and I took a deep, deep breath. "We've got to take a break," I told Geetha.
"It's not done."
"What if I have to piss?" I asked. "You don't want me to pee my pants in front of the army, do you?" She gave me a cold look.
"Then go behind the stage. Hurry up, before the main army begins to march. There are 10 times as many troops in the next march, so empty yourself well."
Shaking my head, I stepped away toward the back of the stage. I really did have to pee. That part had been no lie. What happened next was an accident. I will swear to that for all eternity, up, down, and sideways, even in the bright light of God's grace. I walked into the portal and vanished. Chapter 61. Stepping out into the blissfully cool, fresh, open air of Earth, I felt like I'd found heaven. Unfortunately, it was only New Jersey's sector, but I'd gladly take it at a pinch. The giants were there, setting up camp. They'd come through with survival packs and weapons, but Earth had provided them with a camp here just north of what the locals called Wharton Forest. It was farm country, open land that hadn't been eaten up yet by the mega cities along the coast. No one was looking, so I hopped down from the creaking steel ramp and found a dark place to take a much-needed leak.
"Aren't you Centurion McGill?"
a voice asked behind me. Hello?" I said, turning and zipping up. "What can I do for you, adjunct?" The woman was a hegemony tech, and she wore that same frown I'd seen on Geetha not moments earlier.
"Sir, aren't you supposed to be on the other side of this portal?"
"I am, and I'm going back in a second." Right about then, I heard the thrumming of the fusion generator die. It had been under the ramp, just like the one buried under the stage back on Blood World. With the sound of receding power, I saw the portal flicker, then go out like a light. I said. "Did you techs turn that off?"
"Of course, sir. The giants are all through. This camp can't hold 1,000,000 troops. They're placing the heavy troopers up in Nova Scotia. There's another rig up there, but, sir, you must know all this. They must have briefed you."
My mind fell back to that briefing. I'd been kind of tired after my latest revive and disaffected by the prospects of being deserted on Blood World to play mascot. I recalled having taken a well-deserved nap. I said. "I might have missed that part. So they're parking the army in more than one spot?"
"Yes. Our new gateway tech is much improved. Those TechSmith people, the ones who came from Rogue World, they've moved us decades forward in transportation technology."
"You don't say." I was looking at the dead portal, and it occurred to me that I might be in some trouble. On the far side, 300-odd light-years away, Geetha was probably beginning to wonder where I had gone. "Sir," the tech asked me, "aren't you supposed to review the troops? All of them, I mean? It's going to take at least another 20 hours for the entire force to march through into Nova Scotia."